So here we are with another episode of our International Trade Legends podcast show, and I'm super excited to have Misha on, or probably as he's better known, Winnie Designs. He's one of the people that I sort of follow on social media, like probably one of the largest followings on social media. I think he's about 3.5 million across all social channels. You'll probably correct me on there. But, you know, 500,000 on, I think, Insta, 2.7-ish, I think. Am I right on TikTok? So a bit of a TikTok sensation as well, which is, you know, it's crazy, the figures and the numbers, but we'll get into that a bit later. But basically, really well known across social, some great videos that you do, tips and tricks, loads of like cool, neat stuff that just helps not even the trade professionals, but Mr., you know, and Mr. and Mrs. DIYers themselves, people that like to do things themselves. So I'm really excited to have you on the show, and I really want to just talk to you about how you came to be where you are now and the progression from sort of, did you get into the trades at a young age? Was it family or friends that got you into that? And just talk us through the process of how you came to be sort of the Winnie Designs that everybody sees across social media now.
Thanks for that introduction. And thanks for having me on. So I got into the trades when I moved from Ukraine to United States. So when we moved, just whatever we had in our pockets, essentially, you know, it's very expensive to immigrate to United States, especially four kids, and it was four of us. So that on its own was a task, essentially. So when we got here, just basically had to start from nothing, our family. And
how old were you when you moved?
I was 12. I was 12 years old. We moved that summer when I was 2006. We moved here in 2006 from Ukraine. And then once we got here, it was one of those things where everybody just went to work. Ukrainians are just hardworking people, and they just grind. And, you know, we see my parents working, and my dad was a carpenter. My mom was a cleaning lady, and my brothers and I, we saw how hard they were working. We couldn't ask them for like, hey, can I have some money for a computer? Or hey, can I have some money for, you know, a phone or whatever, new soccer shoes? You know, like we couldn't ask for money because it was just almost, it felt uncomfortable because we saw how hard they were working for that money. So then we got into the trades, essentially. I mean, I was literally 13 years old. I was kind of a bigger kid. So I was 13 years old when we kind of got into the trades, and more on the interior painting side of it, where we knew a bunch of Ukrainians who were able to just get us to work. And they were happy to have young guys, you know, kind of working on the weekends and working on our holidays. So that's kind of how that started. And then once I got into high school, again, like on my weekends and my holidays and summer break, that's 3 months, I started to do framing and more of carpentry work. And I really like that. Framing, especially in the United States, I know like in England, you guys do it a little bit differently.
Everything's made of brick over here, so there's not much of it going on.
But here it's fascinating. It's, you know, you'll start in the morning, whatever, 7 a.m., come 5 p.m., there's like half a house is up. You know, it's just fascinating how it's a very rewarding job that you see, you know, like you see your work really easily. So I kind of fell in love with that. But because we're an immigrant family, you know, my parents wanted better for us and all that. So I was like, well, I love building. Let me go to school for engineering. So I went to school for civil engineering, and I just hated it. I hated it so much. And I started doing, I'm like, well, maybe, you know, the schooling sucks. Maybe like the actual job is cool. So then I started doing my internships. My third and fourth year, I started doing internships, and it was even worse. It's even worse than the school. It's just, you know, you're sitting in the like a field trailer, and you're just writing emails. Everybody's figuring out what they're going to have for lunch. Then you have lunch, and then you write more emails, and then you maybe go out and look, and you know, it's kind of, you're working with all the unions and things like that. And it's just, it was very I didn't like it, I guess. So I ended up dropping out of school with 1 year left. So my parents weren't happy about that, as you can imagine, with all the student loans and everything. So I ended up dropping out and getting into construction. And it was more like general construction. I was still very young and I didn't have like the full scope of kind of knowledge that you need. But because I dropped out of school and I wanted to prove everybody that it wrong that I made a good decision, I start kind of just hiring people, and I was just trying to get as many people as I could just so it looked good, for my parents, like, oh, I got five people working for me and all that stuff. And that business like just imploded. It was so bad. It went really well until it just didn't, where I kind of got screwed over by somebody who knew how to screw somebody over, especially at a young age, where I didn't have all my contracts in order and all that stuff. And I got the classic sue me, conversation. So that kind of imploded. So then I had to kind of start over from scratch. And that's when I learned a lot from that mistake. And I was like, instead of doing just the general construction stuff and kind of being taking on whatever jobs come our way, I'm going to focus on one thing. And for us, that was me and my wife, because everybody basically left because we had to let everybody go because the thing just imploded. It was so fascinating. It was fascinating.
How old are you at this point when you've started your
All
own,
this goes
yeah, and then it goes.
24. So I dropped out. I was 23 to 24. I was, I guess, yeah, 23 when I started my own business. And then it imploded when I was like 26. So it did run for a couple of years. And we were doing great. It's just like, it's this one general contractor that we were doing this like $300,000 job. And I was just like, whoa, this huge project. This is it. And basically, I had to put all my resources towards that. That was the only job we were running. I had to hire extra people. I had to buy new equipment, do all this stuff. And then I got the, I'm not paying you, sue me. And that just, it kills you. Looking back at it, I should have had one crew that did whatever they could while I have other crews doing something else on other projects. So if one goes to shit, you have other, we can curse here.
Yeah. Like the whole point of this show over here is we say whatever on here. Like the other types of podcasts, I always find it's very corporate and it's very like, oh, you can say
I
this
hate
or
that,
whatever. But for us, I mean, Unilight's my business. You know me via Unilight, and if you were to walk out there into the rest of the office, we say whatever we want to each other, as long as obviously everybody's respectful. But on here, you can say anything you want. So it's over to you, and you can curse as much as you need to.
I don't curse a lot, but occasionally it slips.
I don't curse a lot, but when I do a fucking laugh. I like that.
looking back at it, I wish I diversified kind of the income a little bit because it was all kind of beholden to that, and that kind of imploded. So then we started over, and all I had was my tools, and kind of my tools left, and I was like, all right, I don't want to make that mistake, and I actually wanted to learn construction better, because essentially with that, what turned it turned into me just being a project manager and just putting out fires every morning, making sure everybody's doing whatever. And I didn't actually build. And I think I enjoyed the building much more than I do the managing side of it. And that's why I was like, all right, we're going to focus on one thing. And for us, it was the bathrooms. It was either bathrooms or kitchens. We were trying to figure out with my wife which way we wanted to go. Kitchens, there's just so much logistical issues with that. Like you're relying on other people, cabinets and things like that. So we didn't really want to go that route. And we ended up doing a couple of bathrooms in a row, and people just loved them. And then I loved it because you get to do so many things inside a bathroom. You get to experience plumbing, electrical, drywall installation, painting, carpentry, finish work. Like, so you get to do a lot of things. So by the time you're sick of tiling, you're done, So by the time like you're sick of painting a room, you're like, hey, I'm done. So I couldn't, like, I know a lot of people say like, oh, you're the tile guy. I'm like, I love tiling bathrooms, especially showers. I love tiling a shower because on its own, it's just like you walk in and you're like, holy shit, that's a sick shower. But if somebody was like, hey, can you go tile that, like, you know, 400 square foot basement, I would say no, because that's just grunt work. And I don't, you know, want to do that. So my wife and I, then we decided, all right, we're just going to stick with bathrooms and just be really, really good at them. So when our customers are like, hey, can you help me like do a deck or something? We're like, no, we only do bathrooms. And they're like, whoa, that's cool. Like, you know, so in our area, like really quickly, we became like the top bathroom builder in our area. Just because of that, because no, literally there's not another person that just does bathrooms. Everybody does everything, you know? So we carved out this niche, and right now we're booked into 2023. I think February of 23, we're booked, and my phone literally says we're not taking on any more work till 2023. And people are like, okay, thank you. Can you put us on that list? We're like, no. We're like, no. Like, I just don't want to say, yeah. So we're, and so there's two models to business, I guess, for us, or like that I believe, at least what I tell people, is like there's the Honda Civic or the Bentley model, you know. So we're definitely trying to go for the Bentley, where we want to just do a better jobs, like do better quality work, but charge according to it. So we are we're probably the most expensive ones in the area as well, but we're booked because we do good work. And, you know, if I put up something that I don't like how it looks, I'll take it down and I'll start over. So like people see that. And there are people who pay for quality, you know, and what's funny is like at the top, I mean, like the top of quality, there's not a lot of competition. There really isn't like a lot of competition at the top. You just have to do a good job on the jobs themselves.
I mean, one thing I find with a lot of tradespeople is I think 80% of tradespeople, they want to do a really good job and they really take care of the work. I think some of those people, which you've obviously found out from running this side of things and being more niche, is that people will generally tend to pay for a better finish. But I do find from speaking to a lot of tradespeople, they worry about how much do I charge? Should I charge this extra? I've had to do two extra trips to Home Depot or to the wholesaler to go and collect materials. Do I charge for the fuel and my time to go and do this? But obviously it's refreshing to hear you say that people do pay for a better job to be done and not to be scared of that. I mean, like, I'll take you back to where you sort of your business failed, because like that's one thing that I really appreciate on here, because not many people talk about failures. You know, I have them every single day. I walk into this office every single day. Like you say, that you're putting out fires and you think, gosh, I haven't got enough water to put all these fires out.
Yeah.
But what business advice then did you learn from that experience, or what one bit of advice would you give to anybody that's listening or watching this now to sort of say, well, you know, maybe don't expand too quick. Don't sort of be naive on contracts. What would you say you've learnt from that and then maybe taken forward, or what bit of advice would you give to other people listening and watching on that respect?
So I think the two things that I still to this day kind of reflect on that. One is you have to know the trade itself. Whatever you're doing, you as the, I don't want to say the owner, because I think you can be an owner as long as you have a good manager that can manage the crews. But that manager, which what I was essentially, like needs to know the trade. You need to know if like this room should take you one day. You know that because you have done it in one day, right? So if you have employees that are doing that in 5 days, you know that something is off here. Where like, If you don't know the trade, and you could think that 5 days is normal, you know, so like you could think that that's how long it should take. So for us, like I was in a hiring mode without actually knowing what I needed to get or how people were performing, which is a mistake, because, you know, obviously it's a mistake for that. That's one. Two, the devil's in the details in terms of contracts and paperwork. No handshake deals, none of that stuff. Because I basically had a $300,000 handshake deal. Like, all right, let's go. And then, like, you know, he started getting the checks, checks started to come in. And then on the last check after basically all the inspections were passed, it's not like we sucked. Like, we did a good job. We passed all the inspections and everything. And the guy's like, yeah, I don't have the money for you. Sue me. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, and I didn't have a contract with them.
I mean, do you think that your age was partly to play maybe for the naivety in there? Or do you just think that because of obviously dropping out maybe of college or university, thinking, well, I've got a point to prove here, so I just need to crack on? Because another thing that I find with everybody we talk to, especially in the trades, they just want to be on the tools and using their hands. So the business sort of aspect of things sometimes gets a little bit overlooked. Would you say it was maybe the age or maybe a bit of business inexperience?
It was definitely, I think for me, it was insecurity. I was very insecure about dropping out of college. And like, mind you, like I had a company that I interned for like three times in a row, already interned with them. They've already told me once I graduate, like you'll have $80,000 salary. Like we were ready to go with this company. So it was that insecurity to prove my parents wrong that I wanted to basically be, I wanted to look like a boss before I was a boss, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Like I was just trying to, I guess even for my friends, I was like, yeah, I'm a college, you know, I dropped out of college, but look how well I'm doing. I have 9 guys working for me. You know, where in reality, like it's an absolute shit show. And I'm like literally scraping by just to get gas because I, you know, I got into a wrong deal. So it was that. I wish if I could go back, let's say I dropped out and I kind of mastered the trade first and then scale it. Here I went for scale before I got the trade down itself. And now like thinking back, like I wish I went niche as well. Like if I had, you know, imagine I had 9 guys working for me or with me doing bathrooms, we would crush it. But I was doing like drywall work and like, so it wasn't,
trying to do too many things. I think
it was too many things. And what happened is like, I got this one guy who was really good at drywall. So I was like, all right, I'll double down on his skill. So I was like, I'll just start taking on more drywall work. And then the guy left. And then like, I'm like, oh shit, I have all this drywall work that nobody has to, you know? So it was, I guess to answer your question, it was insecurity of me trying to just prove people wrong, I guess. And then I wish I just kind of went into a cave and learned the trade myself and then multiply that.
Yeah. I mean, so from what I've sort of gathered from you saying that is maybe to anybody listening or watching is go out, learn the trade, learn those roles. Obviously contractors is probably one of the hardest things because you have got so many different parts of the trade in there, carpenters, like, you know, roofers, whatever, but like bricklayers, whatever it is, you've got to manage all those types of people. And like you say, unless you've done that job specifically and actually gone and learned a little bit about it, how can you expect to manage somebody that is doing that job? So, you know, listening to you there, it's refreshing to hear somebody actually A, admit that stuff doesn't go right, but then B, sort of say, well, looking back, I wish that they just got that experience because there's so many younger apprentices or trades coming in. And I think obviously the glorification really of Instagram is, oh yeah, you know, you get your tools and all of a sudden you're going to get a Lamborghini, which just doesn't happen. So it's really refreshing to hear you actually comment about that sort of side of things.
I think the whole social media thing that kind of took off for us as well, I think it has a lot to do with just my genuineness to be truthful about what happens on the job site. And I mean, some of my most viral videos are me screwing up. Do you see that video of me putting in the hammer?
I did. I was going to bring that up later because it was one of those videos where the comments, like we always talk about like algorithms, the comments and just trolls and stuff like that. But I mean, it was probably one of the funniest videos I've actually seen without you really even trying to be funny. It just sort of snowballed into it. I don't know whether you want to mention it just to give people context that are listening and watching what the video was, but I found it hilarious in the comments section.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I was just trying to, so Spec Ops, I met them at a local trade show here And I did their competition of like driving nails into the wood. And I was like the top three guys. So like, I know, like I crushed it. I was like excited about that. So, and then they sent me a box of stuff and I was like, all right, let me like make a video for them. So I wanted to do one that showed the magnet feature on their hammer. And then I did it three times where like I put it up there and I put the nails in and it's kind of boring. And then I was like, all right, like, so I was just trying to figure out like a better way to do it. So that was not my first take. I already did like three of those and they all went fine. And they like, and then like, I went to put this one in and the nail bent. And it's like, we're all like, you know, it's yeah, the nail bent. And I was like, there's something here. I'm just going to go with it. And then I missed it. And I'm like, this is hilarious. And then I just like, this. So like, I knew people like that was a comment, like a gold mine. Cause people either understand that that's like funny or people are like, what the hell is happening here? Why is this like online? And like, I do get a lot of trolls and I'll use them to my advantage in my, like I'll give them meat to chew essentially just so they can't.
They chewed on that one a lot. Especially yeah, as the more you smacked it, the more it just bent, which to be fair, everybody who's ever hammered anything, you know, nobody ever hammers a nail in perfect every single time. Let's be serious.
I don't know, but usually the nail bends, you take it out, you put a new nail in and you drive it in. But here I was just like, this is funny. And then I start missing it on purpose, kind of around it. It's, I don't know, it was a hilarious video. So then I was with Alex about to post it and I'm like, so I had the good video where I just, you know, showed off or whatever. I'm like, the good video and then that video. I'm like, we're going with this one because it's funny. Because I watch Alex when I'm like, I'll show him the video. I watch his eyes and then I'm like, that video, he cracked up. He's like, this is hilarious. I'm like, let's go with this one. So it was, you know, and then for that brand, for Spec Ops, I think that video has over 10 million views across all platforms, probably more, like close to 20 across all the platforms, which is, you know.
You can't, you can't put a price on good publicity.
To me, like with my social media stuff, like I can only do it because I'm having fun with it. And then like, if I'm not, I'll usually take a couple of days off and break and then like kind of get back to it. Because people can see right through that. I feel like if you're being genuine or not, but a lot of times I'll like even put a misspelling on the screen just so people then the know-it-alls will go into the comments and they'll like, or if I say, these floor instead of floor rafters or something or floor joists, I'll say like, oh, these floor studs, we're gonna level out these floor studs, and then everybody's like, those are not studs, those are rafters. I'm like, thank you. Like,
I think that comes with the territory. I mean, I'll take you back then. I mean, obviously you've had the issues with the business and then you decide to go more niche, yourself and your wife. Is it just the two of you still now, or is it?
It's my and Alex. So Alex has been with us for 3 years now, going on 4 years and 3 years. And it's like, it's just the perfect fit. He's young. He had zero construction experience. And it's just exactly, it's, he wants to learn. He's a, like we usually start at 8. He's at the job site at 7:20. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, so he's always there. And like, I really do believe like, even if you're like a solo person, you need to have some type of helper just to, one, make it easier for you in terms of like physically, like if you have to pick something up, you need to, you know, like it'll give you just a healthier kind of work situation where you're not just working your ass off and you have that second hand. Two is just more fun to work with somebody on the job site, because I know a lot of people listening probably just, it's just them and like a brush if they're a painter, or you know, if they're a tile setter, they're just by themselves. And also it looks better for the company, like for us, like there's somebody at the job site 8 o'clock every morning while I make my runs. I gotta get this, I gotta get that. I get to the job site at 11, let's say, or 10. Alex has already done the prep. He's there. So the customer feels good, as if they're like, somebody's just there for eight hours a day. Somebody's there. Cause if you show up at like 11, you know, you don't go to your customer and like, oh, so I had to go to this place, and this way. That's why I'm late. You know, you don't do that. You just kind of walk in, you do your thing. And then they're like, are you on a different job site? So it's like, It's just so it's just myself and Alex and Catherine. She does, I mean, she does so much. She does all the design work, so all the 3D renderings and all of that stuff, and then all the communication and scheduling on the back end. And I think that's one of our superpowers for our business, is just that we over communicate with the customers. Like the job that we're doing right now, they're overseas. Like I've only seen them once. And literally every day we're sending them off emails, pictures, updates, things are coming in, things are going out, and they love it. Like, so they feel really good about that.
Yeah, I think for anybody listening and watching to this as well, is you've had the two sides there where you've said, you know, I had more people and it was more difficult, which, you know, increasing any sort of workforce and having to look after more people is more difficult. But then you've also shown the benefit of having a smaller, tight-knit team with people that you can rely on. I mean, where in this process then did the idea for the social media sort of side of things come? Like, how far down into the new venture did you suddenly go, I'm just going to start sticking? And which social media channel was your first? Which one did you sort of test it out on first?
So that is like the reason we started social media was kind of doubling down on what I was just saying. It was like we wanted to look more professional, and we wanted to have an online presence. So when somebody Googled Winnie Designs, we came up. Because a big issue, not a big issue, but like a big thing that I see is like if you don't have any online presence and somebody Googles you or looks you up, and you didn't show up, that's sketchy. So we were like, all right, so we'll start our social media pages and just kind of go from there. And then I listened to a lot of Gary V. I don't know if you know
Gary Vee,
Gary
yeah.
V.
He's
So I
everywhere, especially on TikTok, that guy. He's everywhere.
yeah, so he's everywhere. And I got onto a podcast with him, and I had like a 17-minute conversation with him. And just kind of I talked about how like right now, like deep inside, I believe that like we have something, or that I have something where I can be great. And like, I not to sound cocky and like, please like give me like a break on that. Like, I believe that like if I set my mind towards something, I can do something like amazing in this world. But I have two young kids right now. They're 5 years old and 2 years old, that I want to focus on. And if I wanted to build this massive brand and massive construction company, I know that I would have had to sacrifice on my kids' time. So I chose to go niche, go smaller, and just basically, I mean, I leave work at 3 o'clock, and I'm home to get my kids. Like when they come home from school right now or daycare, we hang out. We make dinner, go to sleep, all that stuff. So like, put them to sleep. So like, I'm definitely a present dad. But I still have that inside of me, that like kind of that drive to do something amazing and great. And when I was kind of talking with Gary Vee, he's like, do social media because you can do that at night. I'm like, shit, you're right. So then I was like, all right, I'm just gonna go for it, and I'm gonna like give it a try on social media. And he was pushing TikTok a lot 2 years ago, and that was 2 years ago. So he's pushing TikTok. I'm like, I'll give TikTok a try. And then he's like, you gotta post 15 times a day. I'm like, fine. I'm like, all right. I'm like, all right, I'll post 15 times a day. So then I would post, and then things would just kind of take off from there. So we started on TikTok, and essentially with that, like it's super, I mean, people overthink how to grow on social media. Like you have to just put the work in, essentially. Like there's really no other way to go. Like there's no, people will DM me like, how do I grow? I'm like, I don't know.
Create content
like
and then do and then put it out.
yes. So basically I would make, 10 to 15 pieces of content a day. And it would be the stupidest things. It would be the very simple things. And I would do that on TikTok and just post them. And out of those 10, 15 that I would post a day, like three or four would do great. You're like, oh shit, like those did good. Okay. So then tomorrow you kind of do more of the videos, like those three or four. Right. So like you see that the ones where you're like eating pizza, nobody really cared about. It's like, all right, maybe like not too many videos like that. But then like if somebody sees like, oh, if you're showing them how to do something, they're into it. So then you do more videos of how to do things. So then we start doubling down on those. And then like now that, after doing that for 6 months, essentially, we did for 6 months we were just kind of growing, figuring out how to do it. We figured out the videos that people wanted to see, essentially, and that I enjoyed making. And now you don't have to post 15 times a day. You just have to post 3 or 4 because you know the good videos are going to go. And then out of those 3 or 4, you kind of know which ones might go viral. And then out of that, there's a serendipity of like just posting at the right time and enough people saw it to kind of push it to that next level. And then it just takes off. We've had videos where we just reposted old videos that did bad at a better time and they would take off. So it's, you know, a lot of it is kind of almost getting lucky a little bit that there's a trend that kind of takes off a little bit, but you have to post them out there to be lucky about. So we started on TikTok essentially 2 years ago. That was our first platform.
I have many conversations, and I always, especially in the comments, I get a load of people saying to me, like, all you ever do is talk about social media, or you only get people on from social media. And I'm thinking, well, all these interesting people that we have on the show as guests, we wouldn't really get to understand them or see them or hear about them if it wasn't for social media. But obviously, you just mentioned to me, so two years ago, we've got Gary Vee to thank for your social media rampage, I should call it, because you've absolutely smashed it. 2 years. So for I know, obviously, we've had COVID and the pandemic as well, which people spend more time on the phone. But just, you know, I always try to say to anybody that's listening or watching to this show is the importance of social media. And again, almost like you've had that life lesson of the failure of the business. Can you just try to explain to anybody, especially people starting out, like just how useful a tool social media can be? I mean, you know, now you're working with brands, you get to go to brand events, like just from even that side of things, or getting sent new cool products to test or to review, you know, just how's it changed what you do, and like, has it made it more enjoyable? What types of things do you get to experience? Just not sell it to somebody, but just give somebody a glimpse of the types of experiences they can get if they utilize social media in the right way.
So I think there's two conversations to have for that. There's one of like how to become a social media influencer. That's completely different than if you have a business and you just want to have a social media presence so that your customers could look you up. That's like, it's completely like, you do not need to post 15 times a day. If you know what I'm saying? If you want people to just be able to find you.
Why did Gary Vee say 15 times a day? Because I've never heard anybody say 15 times a day.
I think one is just, he's trying to basically say that like, it takes a lot of work. You know, and then when people are like, oh, I post once a week, or like, oh, I just post my like flex projects, he's basically saying the 15 times a day just to basically almost mock them. It's like, it's not even close to what you need. Essentially, 15 times a day posting. And today it's a little bit different because especially on TikTok, if you were to go on TikTok and I was to coach you through how to grow on there, like I would not say post 15 times a day, because at this point, there's a lot of content out there. Like, 3 or 4 better ones is better today. Even use your own filter and your own judgment. It's better today to post 3 or 4 and kind of and study, but you have to study them. You can't just like post them and be like, oh, it didn't work. Okay. If people didn't, you know.
Have you thought about actually doing some courses or teaching people about ways to improve?
Yeah. I mean, when people DM me, like I've helped a lot of even other creators. Just, I mean, I can tell everybody what I do now. Like it's really not that hard. I think it's just literally work. And if I tell people every day, I put 5 to 6 hours of work into social media every day, you know, and right now when I'm trying to do my vlog, I'm doing a daily vlog that I just started last week. And now I'm basically editing a YouTube video every single day. I'm editing a YouTube video. So that's even more work, but I see what I'm trying to get out of it. So I'm okay with that. It's just people don't want to take on another job, but they all want to kind of like get free shit and they want to get, you know, paid for posts and stuff. Like, I'm like, you don't earn that yet. You haven't like, so I treated it as a job before it became quote unquote job. I put the work in essentially. So there's the two parts, I guess. Like, so I was saying, like, if you just want to have, I guess there's there's like three types of accounts you could have. One is just literally, it's your like resume. It's like, here's our cool projects. Here's what we do. If you want to see our previous jobs, check out our Instagram. You have like 500 to 1,000 followers, 1,500 followers. And they just, you know, you literally just send your customers there to see what you can do. Then there's that next kind of bucket of people between like 5,000 followers and like 30,000 followers. And that's kind of your expert like area where you can say like, I'm an expert in tile installation. So then when people look you up, you come up, you know, like you come up as the guy who's really good at tiling, the guy who, or a girl who's really good at carpentry. You come up that way, and then you can start positioning yourself as an expert. And those are the, that's the area where you can then start getting free products and testing things out because you're the expert, right? And if in, you know, if you go into a niche, it's easier to do that in terms of like, you know, if you want to break out in a basket weaving niche, you probably need like 3,000 followers. Now you're one of the biggest ones because it's more of a niche. But if you're trying to just break out in construction in general, it's going to be much harder because there's more people on that. And then there's after that, it obviously, is when you can become the quote unquote influencer, where you have, you know, a couple million followers and all that kind of work. And that's, the game changes at that point because now you're started to see like, shit, like there's something there that's outside of construction. So your almost business plan changes now because of that. And the other two, no, you're still doing, you know, 10 hours of work, 9 hours of work on construction. And then occasionally you're putting in a couple of videos out there. But if you're kind of break out into that, like 1% of the accounts, that's when your math kind of starts to change. And you're like, you can make other decisions, I guess, like on that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your story and your sort of prominence on TikTok and how quickly that's grown reminds me of a bit like Ryan SQ2 over here. It was obviously he's blown up on TikTok, and then I think everybody loves his daily sort of, all right, I'm from London, you know, all that sort of stuff on his videos, and he's you know, he's very frank in his conversation. So, you know, the thing that I've sort of noticed with a few people that have really blown up in recent years, it's all started on TikTok. Because again, me as a brand, this is talking from my own perspective, was TikTok. I overlooked it because I just thought it was kids dancing. I'll be really honest with you. I was just like, I can't deal with this. Whereas Instagram, I found that it was like, there was a good community on there. Everybody supported each other. It was like slightly more professional. But actually now we've started on our TikTok journey where I think the brand's got about 10,000 followers now. So we're going to hopefully catch you one day. But, you know, just where would somebody start then who's literally never done anything on social media? Where would you say is a good place to start for somebody? Which platform? Or do you just think just get yourself on any platform and start, you know, putting yourself...
With what goal? With what goal? What's the goal?
I think most people, they start social media as just, they have an account, and then what ends up happening, I think as it grows, it changes. Like for us as a business, I just thought, well, we've got to be on there because everybody's on there. And then what's actually started to happen over the years was I've realized this is actually a really good tool to hit my customer directly in one quick post. So there's no distributor in between. There's me talking to my customer like that.
Yeah.
And it's brought me a lot closer to not just my customer, but to the trade community, to being involved in things, in conversations, in things that I normally wouldn't as a brand have got to see. And I've got to watch people like yourself working and thinking, hold on a minute, they're up there on a ladder and they're doing this. If I make something that can just go there, then I've seen 12 people today just doing that same job, and I could potentially make a product that makes somebody's life easier. So that's, for us, it changed like that. But obviously, you know, when you're probably an influencer, you probably start and you think, well, you know, I just started my channel because I like to put stuff out there and I like to give tips and tricks to people. And then it changes into something else. So I don't know whether when you first started, you just thought, oh, I'm going to go TikTok because that's the latest one, or was there a particular reason?
So I started on TikTok. It was literally because of the conversation I had with Gary Vee. He's like, TikTok is the future. You got to go on there. It's the best and fastest growing organic reach that you could get out there.
He wasn't wrong.
No, and in my mind, I'm like, he knows more than me. I'm like, okay. You know, so like, why would I question that? So then I was like, okay, I'll do that. So then we started blowing up on TikTok, and then I started looking at my Instagram. I'm like, damn, this looks pathetic. You know, we have like 1.5 million followers on TikTok or something. Or like, I think we had a million. No, hold on. I think we had like 700,000, because I know we hit a million on TikTok, 100 on Instagram at the same like week. I remember that was like a giveaway. So I was like, we were like 750. I'm like, our Instagram just looks whack. I'm like, okay, let me just kind of focus a little bit on that. And then the things I learned on TikTok, I just brought over to Instagram and just blew up. And it's literally all organic. And what's nice is because of all the videos I posted on TikTok, I already did the filter. I already filtered out the bad videos. So I just took the good videos that blew up on there, reposted them. It's not like, it's not different content. It's literally the same content. I have all the videos saved on my phone. So everything that's happened last 2 years happened right here. Like I don't use different cameras or anything like that. It's all with my phone. Even the YouTube videos that I do right now, I just shoot on my phone and I edit it on my phone and then I put it out. So like, I don't overcomplicate that process. A lot of people will overcomplicate like with gear and all this stuff. I'm like, you know, you're building a nice house in the middle of the woods, essentially. Nobody cares about you. Like, so like, you don't like just start. And then like, if you want to like get better equipment, I guess, but the iPhone like 12 or whatever, it's nicer than half of the cameras out there. So, I guess if you're making like bird flying content, you probably need a better lens, but like in the bathroom or a construction site, you know, like you're really unnecessary. So we did that. And then our Instagram looked pathetic. So we're like, all right, let's do Instagram. That blew up. And then I was like, shit, like our YouTube looks bad now next to Instagram and TikTok. So I'm like, all right, like let's just do it YouTube. And then that blew up. And then I'm like, damn, I think Facebook is starting their new reels as well. I'm like, all right, I'll just post on Facebook. And now we have 420,000 on Facebook in the last 4 months. I think we grew that. So you learn that. It's kind of like playing soccer or football, right? Like playing, you know how to play the game, and then you just go to different teams. You can kind of pick out. So the mindset that you have to have is essentially short videos are king right now. Everybody wants to compete with TikTok. That's why if you know how to do TikTok, you can know how to do all of the other ones, because all the other ones right now are trying to compete with TikTok. So if you can figure out how to post good TikTok videos that go viral and all that stuff, just take those same videos and upload them on the other platforms, but you have to edit them inside those platforms. Don't edit. So like I always have the same raw video. So even if my text, you want to use the text from Instagram, the text from Facebook, the text from YouTube, because they notice that and then they push that out. And now that we have like these four stools, we can post a video and it usually goes viral somewhere. Like, I'm not sure why or where, but like now that we have the four platforms. So I don't know if I answered your question. I think I just kind of rambled.
What I try to do, and some people sort of go, where's he leading with this question, is I just, even if one person listens to this or watches it and picks up on that, especially the one thing that you've just said about editing in those specific platforms, like one of the things, we had a girl on who is a female bricklayer called Darcy Rattle Kings, and her TikTok account was like, when she came in, it was just going like this. And she said, you've got to edit inside, you've got to use the filters, you've got to use the text, yeah, use a sound that's trending, all that type of stuff. And up until that point, we were doing TikTok videos and they were getting like 100 views. And then we did one with her in here and he got 10,500, and we were all like, oh man, we've made it. But it's little bits of information. So I try to extract like little bits of knowledge from people or stuff about their experiences that they've done, just so people can learn something from the podcast. Because I just think too many people do podcasts and it's just a chat about things. And, oh, yeah, you know, like, tell us all the great things in your life. Yeah. So I'm just trying to extract a bit of knowledge from people that obviously have done good things, great things. That's why they're on here.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with any one of these videos that put out is the first 5 seconds. It's just that hook. You know, if you have a good hook, then it will go viral, or like it will get pushed. Essentially how these platforms work is like you post a video, 100 people see it, and then the algorithm will see how many of those 100 liked it. Cool, a certain amount liked it. Let's show this now to 1,000 people. Okay, the trend is continuing. 1,000 people, this certain amount of them liked it. Let's push it to 100,000. And then, so it's these little tiers that you have to break through, and then like it just goes viral. And then like once it kind of passes those filters, then it goes to the big one. So it's very important to do the hook. And that's why usually I'll start with the end almost. It's like, today I'm going to show you how to do this, or like, let me show you why this thing sucks. And then you explain it. Don't explain it and then say, and that's why this sucks. So it's always the hook first. And then that's where I'll spend more time on that first 10 seconds of the video than I do on like the other portions. Obviously, just because if somebody doesn't even want to spend 10 seconds on it, then they just won't watch it. And if they're not watching a certain amount of it, then it just never gets pushed. But that's something, again, like, yeah, you study it.
My favorite one of those is watch until the end on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
So clickbaity. But no, I mean, yeah, you know, it's great to listen to your experiences, the progress, how you've got to here. I mean, those, if for anybody listening or watching to this, like those little tiny nuggets of information you've just dished out, like there's a couple of bits in there that I didn't know. So I'm going to take them and run with them as well. So thank you for them. But
and then sometimes people will say like, so there's the trending songs. There's like the top 10 trending songs, and 99% of the time, like that's the song that you have to go with. Even if you hate it, you know, like it's literally trending because people are watching. It's like, you know, it's not like there's somebody from TikTok who's like, I like this song. It's like, it's literally just, that's what people are watching. Those are the sounds that are being used. So you usually go with those. But if you're making a video and it's like doing something in New York and you see like, let's say the New York backdrop, you use a Frank Sinatra video because that will go viral. Because that's, so as much as you want to like use the trending sounds, if there's something that just fits really, really well with your video, you go with that, because at the end of the day, using the right trending sound will maybe account for 5% of the 5% of that algorithm. But the right song will have people watching it longer. So the sounds are very important. I will use a lot of things like, most people don't know this, or 99% of contractors, or this is the right way, or this is my favorite way. So like when you say things like that, those are hooks, right? So it's, that hook is just very, very important. And I think, so to go back to what you were saying with social media and brands, I think the position, like, because I consult with some brands right now, and what I always tell them is like, it's an amazing opportunity to build your brand culture. You don't leave it out to essentially the consumers, because a lot of times, older times, it's like basically when things go out, people then create the content and people do all that stuff for you, and the culture is built by the consumers. Or for you guys, you can dictate that culture. So with Unilite, you guys can literally be the fun, you know, flashlight company or whatever it is, or, you know, fun tool company, and you guys can kind of break out. So people would almost see that, oh, you guys are the company who did that video, because it's like a, you know, it's like Red Bull. Like half of the people don't know Red Bull because of their drink, but they know it because of their Red Bull racing team, and because of the soccer team, and because of the guy jumping out of space, you know? So it's that kind of stuff. So if I had like a brand myself, it's just something that we're working on, like that's what I'm going to be focusing on, is just kind of building the culture by yourself of what you want people to essentially perceive you as. That
I mean, what we do round about this time, Winnie, is obviously I've had you on the phone for quite some time, so I'm conscious of taking up too much of your time. We normally do sort of almost like a Jerry Springer final thought type of thing, where you can talk to us about future plans, or if you've got any advice for people listening or watching, or you want to shamelessly plug your social media channels, which I don't think you need to do, but you know, brand is everything, yeah, as they say. But you know, anything that you want to sort of convey to people that are listening or watching to the show that you might not have brushed on, or we might not have talked about, Is there anything there from your side?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is that it's not as hard as it looks, is what I would want to say to people. It's like all of this stuff, like literally anything, like the social media, it's like, okay, all you have to do is just put 5 hours of work in. Like, and it's not hard work. I'm not telling you to like solve like algorithms or like, you know, geometric equations or something. You just have to put the work in to do this stuff. Same thing with bathroom building and construction. Put the work in and like learn the trade. Like, that's the biggest one. And for me as a future of what I want to do, like I think we are going to like double down on social media. The thing that I'm over the next like 5 years want to do is basically be the Gordon Ramsay of construction. That's my kind of like future plan. Is like I want to build for the rest of my life. Like I want to build houses. I want to like flip houses, build Airbnbs, build giveaway houses, that kind of stuff. But obviously, just kind of make construction more fun. A lot of this stuff is a lot of know-it-alls and kind of people talking down at people almost.
Like, a lot of bullshit.
It is so much bullshit with this. And people make it almost, people almost make it like so hard to like, they make it sound harder than it actually is or something. They try to almost make it more intellectual, where it's like the videos that I make, I just, maybe it's because I'm not like school trained on construction. So I just use simple like language and I don't overcomplicate it. That's why like they're relatable. But so that's kind of my goal. And then my wife and I, like, we're about to buy a house and we're going to be flipping, like not flipping it, we're going to be living in it, but we're going to be renovating all the rooms in it as well. And I want to focus on this vlog that I'm starting, because I can see, like, even with TV shows, like we've been approached like from a couple of channels and we just never wanted to go down the TV route, because it's just like, you usually do TV to get the views, but we already have the views. So now we have to figure out like how to almost get the show on our, by ourselves. So we're going to go with the vlogging, and I want to kind of start mastering this longer form content. And going back to the thing I was saying about the short form content is I'm posting one video a day right now on YouTube, which is super aggressive. Like usually it's one a week max people will do. So then I'll do one a day just so I can learn faster. This way, you know, 3 months from now, I'll have almost 100 videos that I can look at and see what worked, what didn't work, and then kind of do more of that. But if I did that, you know, one a week, we're only at 12 videos. So it's just the sample size has to be bigger. That's kind of what we have for our future.
One thing I just want to interrupt in there is, from me sitting here talking to you, obviously, like you've moved to a foreign country, age 12, you've had some, you know, stumbling blocks along the way, but then like one thing listening to you is you're relentless. So you know, when people say, oh, I haven't got enough time, or I can't do this, or I don't know where to start with this, obviously, like the one thing I get from you is you find it easy because you've not mastered it, you've put the work in, so now it becomes second nature to you. And the one thing that I want to try and stress to anybody that's listening or watching to this, because they'll all be like, how'd you do it? How'd you make the channel grow? You'll still get those messages even after this show, is just take your time, but just put the effort in, whatever you do. And that's one thing that everybody that we have on this show, especially listening to you, that I've sort of gathered from our conversation today, is you just got to put the effort in. And like you said, 5 hours a day. Some people go, I'm working for 8. How do I put 5 hours a day in? Well, when you come home, you have to sit on the sofa. You know, you have to sit at your desk and just do it. And then eventually you get to a point where it actually becomes second nature, so you get quicker at it, you know?
Yeah, it's you know, if you don't want to do it, then like, don't ask for the reward. It's one of those things. It's like, it's fine not to, right? Not everybody wants, should be, or like a social media influencer. And that's what I want to like stress is like, I would rather want to help the 95% or 99% of people who are literally listening to just not become social media influencers, but more of just having a good account. I think what I would do if I was, let's say, still had like 10,000 followers and things like that, I would use that. I would be very heavy in my stories. So when that potential customer that you just sent a proposal to and you tell them, follow our Instagram, check out our stories, they get to see what you are like on a construction site. They get to see if you're a dick. They get to see if you're, you know, who you are and how you take care of the house, how do you take care of the project, and you can get better jobs, I believe, that way, just to basically have this almost live resume of what you're doing. And then with brands, like, same thing. I just stress, it's like, it's almost in today's world where everything is so huge. You have your Amazons and Apples and all these massive conglomerates. The people who will break out are the people who go super, super raw and super, super authentic. If you guys just got a bad shipment of stuff, right? And you see it, like, most people will just, okay, like, all right, that's a bad box, we're going to send that back. I would make so much content around that. I would say, like, we just got a bad box of these flashlights or these lights. What are we going to do? We're going to throw them out because we take care of our, you know, so like you spin the mistake into something that builds your culture of like, no, like we won't take this, you know, where like same thing with our mistakes. I'll show like, hey, we chipped our tile, we're going to take it out. People are like, that's amazing. Like, people can see through the bullshit, I think. And in today's world where there's so much content out there and the people who are raw and authentic. And that's why I wanted to highlight that my phone is literally all I use, because if you have too much stuff, you overcomplicate things. And I don't mean you guys, you have a podcast and all that set up, but like I'm saying, if you're on a construction site, you don't need boom mics and lights and all this other stuff. Like, you know, if you have a decent light, a Unilight, if you want to put into a corner or something, right?
That was a good plug.
link in bio, guys. Link in bio.
Other lights are available.
That and then the phone, and that's it. There's really, don't overcomplicate it, because people like the raw content right now. And I think that's why TikTok is absolutely destroying everybody else. It's because if you watch TikTok, it's just authentic content. And if you watch Instagram or something like that, it's more of polished, because that's what they wanted. They wanted people to have these perfect Instagram pictures, perfect Instagram videos and posts, and people are just sick of it, I feel like, especially after COVID. They're like, don't like come at me, just show me what it really is.
Yeah, no, fantastic. I mean, just for me personally, like, there's not many, everybody that we have on as a guest, I always find interesting because their backstory, like obviously you mentioned that you moved to a different country. I love all that sort of stuff. But there's the odd person that I get on where I get a little bit of information where even I'm getting educated. So, you know, from me personally, the stuff about TikTok and stories and stuff like that, like I've been absorbing that information because it's priceless for me. So big thank you from that side. Again, apologies, Pete's not here. So
yeah, damn, he had one job.
he had one job, but big thanks for taking your time out, because I know when you're busy and whatever, and people want a piece of your time. And just again, for anybody listening or watching, just, you know, be appreciative of, like, if you come back with a message in the DMs and stuff like that, like, you know, I can't describe how many we get as a brand. And then when you've got the level of following that you have, like, if anybody takes time out to just give that information up, just appreciate those people, because there's not many of them. So big thanks from me, Winnie, for you know, dropping in, and hopefully people actually listen to this and they suck up and hoover all that information, because it was fantastic talking to you. So big thank you from me. Hopefully when I get myself to the US, we'll come and visit you and shove a camera in your face and follow you around for a little bit as well. So
there you go.
Yeah,
all right, sounds good.
No worries. Thanks very much for coming on the podcast, mate.